Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the talk show Uplifting Communities with John and Miss J. And I tell you, we have a really good show for you guys today. But before I go any farther, I would like to ask Miss J if she wouldn't mind taking the pleasure on bringing our special guest on.
Absolutely. This is a great topic that we have today. I consider it a healing topic, so I'm real excited that we have this topic. But we have a very special guest, Terry Lynn Sims. She's an advocate for childhood trauma and abuse across the board. She's also a certified marriage counselor with her husband. So this is going to be a great show. And before we get started, Terry Lynn, I want to take a moment to tell the audience just a little bit about you, and then we're going to move on from there.
Okay, my name is Terry Sims. Like she said, I am a pastor, an ordained pastor. My husband and I have been married for 25 years. We'll make 26 years in November. We have 6 adult children, and we're looking forward to having our 5th grandchild any day now. And
right.
We live in Oceanside, California.
Awesome. So, Terry, I know that you are an advocate for childhood trauma, so that the audience kind of gets a full picture before we start jumping into questions. Discuss childhood trauma and what it entails, and we'll go on to how it affects our lives.
Okay. Basically, childhood trauma, it is children who have been abused in any type of way, emotionally, physically, sexually, any sort of trauma that you've experienced as a child. Well, we all know that it follows you into your adult life until those issues are dealt with. And so many have suffered from childhood trauma, and they didn't even realize it until they were adults. But, you know, this is not normal. This doesn't happen in every household. A lot of adults now walking around, their main issue is that they have PTSD from things that happened in childhood. And so my ministry is all about healing that broken child, healing the little girl inside or the little boy, because nowadays more men are stepping up and admitting that, you know, they've been abused in some way. Whereas though before it was kind of taboo. No, men didn't want to admit that.
That is so true. And, you know, when you talk about childhood trauma, you know, a lot of times people think you actually have to experience abuse, but even the attempt of someone trying to abuse you is a trauma.
Exactly.
You know,
or watching others around you be abused. It can be traumatizing if there was a domestic violence situation and that violence wasn't directed towards you, but you saw it. That causes just as much trauma as it actually happening to you.
Absolutely. Now, you work with women and children as well. So I want to start with the kids, and we'll go up to the grown people stuff as we get close to the end. Let's talk about some of the things that you see working with these young kids and the pain and how you go about helping them heal from that pain.
I worked for 15 years for Children's Services, and I worked at a place called Casa de Amparo, and it's a receiving center. It's where when the children are first taken out of the home, they go to this receiving center, and before they can be placed in a group home or a foster home. And I've seen everything from ritualistic abuse, which is, you know, like things like that. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. I've seen children who have been literally passed around to every male in the family. We've had a children's unit and a teen unit, and the teens were on the top floor and the children were on the bottom. I've taken care of 12-year-old girls who were on the top floor and they had their baby downstairs in the children's unit. You know, these young children who have had kids by their dads, their uncles. And it's just so sad. It's heartbreaking. I've seen children come in that have just been so neglected that, you know, they're just so underweight and they just have failure to thrive. And it's just, it's awful. I've seen some horrible things.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking.
Yes, it is. So we've
so
actually
what are some of the things you do for them? What are the tools
Well, the main tool that I use in my ministry is inner healing. I always, because a lot of times, sometimes we want to jump to and start addressing the symptoms without getting to the root. And that's what happened to me. I was going to therapists and going to these doctors and counselors, and everybody wanted to talk about the symptoms, and nobody really addressed the root. And that was the issue. And when you do that.
Hello?
No, she's still on board. Yeah. I guess it's a, hello?
Terry? She got me all involved and then disappeared on me.
No,
but,
she's
something must have happened to the phone. But,
yeah.
You know, just before she gets back, Terry has actually experienced childhood trauma growing up. And so I guess she's going to elaborate on that, but she's experienced childhood trauma growing up, and this is one of the reasons why she took on this advocacy. You know, she became an advocate for it because it was something that she experienced, and knowing, you know, having that experience and understanding what is needed to heal from that, you know, so hopefully she'll come back. I know something must have happened because
I have on board. She's on board, but for some reason her phone, I don't know, you know, this is live radio.
Well, until she comes back, you know, I did a lot of research on it. And one of the things I realized is that a lot of adults don't realize, as she mentioned, have experienced, don't think certain things have taken place in their life as trauma because it's become normal for them. And so as they grow up, it's hard for them to have relationships. For young women, why they keep picking the same bad guy? And for the men, why can't they make a commitment that lasts? You know, and all these things are things that happen to us early in life that we never heal. And unfortunately in our community.
I hear your phone, Ms. Day, not to cut you off, but tell her to call back.
Hello? Terry, call back in, because you cut off. Okay. All right, bye-bye. Excuse me, audience. That happens sometimes. But so we don't address issues, especially in the Black community. We don't like to get, you know, help outside the home. We don't want people to know our business, so we don't go to counseling. You know, same thing with mental illness. We don't want to deal with mental illness, so we say, girl, he just crazy, or she just crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, so we label stuff instead of healing. And so to have this kind of topic where we are actually going to learn how to heal it, I think it's really important, not just for women, but for men and women. Even though she's a woman speaking, her and her husband both work with men and women. So this is a great subject. Just hold on one second.
Just hold on, audience. Sorry about that. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties, but everything will be straightened up soon.
Absolutely. You know, Blog Talk has kicked me off 100 times. I mean, last
well,
time
normally what happens is that when something good is on, well, then for some reason, old Satan has a tendency of coming in and trying to take it away.
Ms. J, you echoing for some reason. Oh, I don't know why. I let them know about your experiences, and so just go ahead and continue to elaborate on what you were saying.
Okay, I was just saying that a lot of times we address the symptoms without addressing the root of the problem, and that is what I experienced from going to counselors and therapists They only wanted to, you know, recommend medication and start all sorts of therapy to help stop the symptoms, but I was still broken inside. It wasn't until... Go ahead.
No, I want you to finish your point, and then I'll say something.
And it wasn't until they start addressing things from childhood and that inner healing that I got. And it came through God. It came through ministry. It didn't come in secular medicine. It didn't come that way. They could not help me.
That's powerful. That is very powerful. Yeah, I was reading an article about a year ago in Oakland, California. It's a lot of the kids can file for PTSD now,
right,
because of the trauma that they experienced. Now, I don't know about other, you know, cities and states, you know, but I do know in Oakland, because of all the, you know, trauma that they done experiencing, people get killed, drug war and all of that stuff. And there's a lot of kids was filing for PTSD.
Right,
and,
because they say that the symptoms are similar to soldiers in a war zone.
That's right. You know, and I'm a product of the war, you know, the Vietnam War. Matter of fact, you live in Oceanside, and I was stationed at Camp Pendleton.
I am 10 minutes away from Camp Pendleton's back gate.
I know exactly where Oceanside is. I used to go to Oceanside all the time when I was stationed there. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm a product of the war, you know, and I have PTSD. But like you say, you know, I had to give my life to God in order for it to really, really work for me, because nothing else could work for me. Man, I was out there, I was a nutty buddy, you know. And once I put God in my life, well, then I start understanding things, you know, and understanding why this happened. And then, you know, by was raised up without a mother and lived with different people, you know, relatives and stuff, you know, they was really nice to me, don't get me wrong, you know, but that kind of played an effect on me also. And that played an effect on a lot of kids. People might not see it, but man, you growing up without a mother or without a father, or they may be alive, but let's say if they're not around, that has an effect, you know. And a lot of times that caused children to do things out of the norm.
Yes, right. Yeah, because there's a lot of grandparents raising kids now. A lot of great grandparents are raising their kids.
Right. That's so true. That is true.
You know,
yes, that's definitely true.
What is the difficult part?
The difficult part for me was overcoming the shame. I had so much shame and guilt, even though I was a child and the things that happened to me I had no control of, I still had immense shame and guilt. And that was the hardest part, and that shame prevented me from asking for help or even admitting the things that had happened to me. I was literally in my 30s before I could audibly say exactly what happened to me. I kept it all inside, and some of it I really just blocked out. I blocked it out until I started that healing journey and things, and the Lord would just, you know, uncover different things. That's why my book is called Uncover Girl. And, you know, it's just uncovering that everything that's hidden on the inside of you, everything that's locked on the inside of you. And so that was the hardest part, was the shame. I was just ashamed. I was married for so many years before I let my husband into that space and actually told him what was going on for me. And everything was a trigger for me. I had so many triggers. I mean, and I would just rage. I had a lot of rage and anger.
Yeah, they say the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
That's right.
You know, and that's a true statement.
Right.
When you say you know, so much buried, you know, that's the same thing that was with me, was so much buried. Matter of fact, When I came back from Vietnam, I did 3 tours in Vietnam. I got out in 1975. And I tell you, when I was, some of my family members still don't know I did 3 tours in Vietnam. You
right.
know, because I was so ashamed to tell, I don't know, it was a stigma, you know,
right.
against the Vietnam vets. And I didn't let people know I was a Vietnam vet for a long time. You know, my
right.
application, when I applied for a job, I used to lie and tell them I wasn't a Vietnam vet. You know, I'd tell them I wasn't even in the military because I was
right.
I was ashamed of all the stuff they were saying. And also, I didn't want to get turned down from no job.
Right,
so
right.
I understand exactly where you're coming from. And I
now,
am so happy that you... at you doing this for the field. Matter of fact, I went back to school after a while. I went back to school, and I took up behavior science and social and community services. I worked
right,
in the
right.
youth center as a manager, and there was so many people came in there that was torn apart
right.
through their childhood
right.
because of their childhood.
Right.
I understand. Man, that's heavy. I love it. I love it.
And the sad part about it is the church will not address these issues. For some reason, they will not address it in the church. And I'm like, the church is the healing place. That's where we should be able to come with all of our issues. But only certain things are, you know, acceptable to speak about in church. And mental health is not one of them. They don't want to talk about sexual abuse, and they don't want to talk about mental health. And everything is not devils, and everything is not demons.
That's right.
It's
That's
just
right.
not. And so
yes.
I want to shine the light in those dark places and make it okay for people to tell their truth and
Absolutely.
Not feel judged or ostracized by the church.
Yeah. So they'll pass that plate in a minute, but don't want to hear your story.
Well, I think
right.
the church is ill-equipped to kind of handle it, and I really feel like a lot of pastors and leaders, they really need some training in this area because sometimes they do more damage than help because
That's
you
true.
Don't really know how to address it. And I feel like that should be a part of training for every ministry team.
That's
yeah.
true. You're Absolutely. Right.
That's
You're 100% right. That's right.
Great point.
You know?
So let's talk about the women that you deal with. That have been, you know, the abuse, the type of things you see in the women, because you also are healing them, those women, and women that are married as well. But let's talk about the single women and some of the things that you have experienced with them and what are the tools you use to help them, besides your great book. I've been taking books.
What, the number one symptom, one of the main symptoms if you've been sexually abused is you are very promiscuous. You're very promiscuous. That sexual sin just comes along with that because that abuse is an open door for the enemy to get in there and do that. And so your whole view is distorted. And, of course, a lot of women equate sex with love. And so, you know, and you just – it makes you feel better physically just temporarily, even if you know this person doesn't care about you. And it's all – they're just wounded. And so – I like to take the non-judgment approach and get the women to a place to where they can love themselves and where they can understand that no matter how much sex you have, how many drugs you do, how much alcohol you have, it's never going to feel better because God is never going to let you get from man or things which you're solely supposed to get from him. And
That's right.
the love of God is what can come into that place and heal all of that.
That's right.
That's the approach I take.
You're right, because, you know, I think, and not just abused women, but I'm going to say women in general hate to be alone. And they
right.
use sex as a tool. Like, they know the dude is no good, but he can stay
right.
he can lay the rod. So everybody he's going to let him in every time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we substitute things, and we settle for things. And then we allow ourselves to be abused sometimes because we settle for things that we know are not right or not good for us. And that also puts us in that position to be abused. And he may not be cussing you out or laying hands, but being mistreated is abusive too.
It is. And
that
fear of being alone causes you to settle.
Yeah.
That fear of being by yourself. I have my older sister has been married 5 times before she was even 50 years old. And we came out of the same household, so that's just the way she dealt with her abuse. Me, on the other hand, I was in gangs. I ran the streets. I was promiscuous. I was addicted to prescription drugs from the age of 13 into my late 20s to barbiturates, to pills.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just had so many different things, that ways that I would act out. Because I knew it was temporal, but it would numb that pain just temporarily for me to get through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And I think that's what people are looking for, that quick relief. And healing in the right way takes time, because you got to acknowledge you got a problem.
And
then
that is the thing, acknowledging.
Yes.
That's it, acknowledging. For so many years, I did not want to acknowledge that I had issues and that these things. I didn't want to tell anybody that my family members used me a child for pornography when I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
Because then I would have to answer the questions to the family, like who did it, who what. And for a long time, I felt guilty. I felt like I needed to protect the family and not tell this stuff and not say it. I felt responsible, you know, because our family is close and, you know, your parents did this. How could I say that to my first cousins? How could I, you know, and I just couldn't, I just suffered in silence for so long trying to protect people instead of focusing on protecting me and getting healthy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's common, especially in the black community. We
right.
Even back in the old days, you didn't ever told anybody.
You don't tell what's going on in the house.
Don't tell my business. You don't tell what's going on in the house. You get in your butt every day. You better get your butt. You need to silence. Cover that eye with some makeup and keep it walking. That is a bad stigma that we have today in our community that we don't. But back in the day, you know, the family secret was very important to them.
Right.
You know, you don't tell the family business to nobody.
That's
you
right.
Know, that's why, if a young girl got pregnant, they would send her off for her to have the baby. You know,
right.
Because of the family secrets. And it's,
right.
You know, matter, you know it, that's how it was.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I just think that, you know, we are in a place now where we got to start speaking up and speaking out, because all these, you know, we got a lot of things going on in our community, but mental illness and abuse, especially sexual abuse, is a big secret, and we don't talk about it enough. We act like it's taboo, but we have to get that information out, because it's a lot of women like you that are suffering in silence, you know, and don't want their shame, like it's their fault. You know, it could be the favorite uncle. I know for my girlfriend, it was the favorite uncle. Everybody
right.
Said my uncle was the best man in the United States of America, and he was a pervert.
Right.
I mean, no,
that's
and
right.
I was saying, why is he, you know, and but I remember, and you, and I remember when she told. I think I don't know if it was you or John that said this, but I remember when she told her mother slapped the smack out of her, told her
right.
Ever tell that lie again. You know, she said a whole bunch of nasty stuff. I'm not going to say it, but just. I mean, when she smacked her so hard, I felt it, because she wanted me to be the witness, because I saw him doing something. And I was so scared that she slapped her. I ain't had nothing to say, because you slapped me, my mother going to slap her. So I just went home. I said, well, but, you know, we got to do better. We got to really listen to our kids when they come to us, whether we believe it, whether it's hard to believe or whatever our problem is, that's our problem. If our kids come to us, we have to listen. You know, it could be a teacher, a football coach, basketball coach. You know, it's not just limited to family, because you have people coaching kids that are being abused. You know, so
right.
That weapon to come to us. Yeah.
Definitely. And my growing up, I always felt like my mother knew something happened, but she did not know how to address it, so she just overcompensated with other things. When she was 8 years old, she got raped by her older sister's boyfriend. And when she told, she got beat so bad, she never mentioned it again. And so we grew up, couldn't even say the word sex. We couldn't say anything pertaining to sexuality or anything like that. So that's the kind of environment it was. So it was not even safe to even bring that subject up and say, hey, this happened to me. because she just couldn't deal with it. She did not have a grid for it because of the things that she experienced.
Right.
And
she didn't have the support she needed. You know, people do what they know how to do with the knowledge they have at that time. And you think about it, like we were all just saying, back in the day, that was something you couldn't talk about. So no one rescued her. No one hugged her. No one protected her. So she didn't know how to do that for you. And a lot of times I tell kids that, you know, because I talk to kids too, that, you know, you got to be taking easy on your parents, because a lot of times kids expect parents to know how to do stuff or expect parents to be a certain way, and they forget that parents are just people too.
Right. And I had to learn that. I had to learn that when I started having my own kids, and I had to go through all the trial and error. It gave me a new respect for my mom when I realized, like, wow, she was ill-equipped to deal with this, to deal with my issues, and to deal because she hadn't yet dealt with hers.
Right.
And so I did have to learn that, and it was easier for me to forgive her because she never really did anything to me like that. Everybody thought that I was her favorite. I was not her favorite. She just knew that I was wounded. That's all that was. And, you know, when I got raped at 6 years old, and I remember just going home and just getting in the closet. They found me in the closet the next day. I didn't know how to reconcile that. I didn't know how to even verbally, you know, articulate what had happened to me. And my mother died not knowing. I never told her.
Wow.
She knew that, baby. Because if she loved
you, I felt like she knew something.
Yeah. She saw, because if she experienced it, a mother, and you're a mom too, we can look at our kids and know something wrong. They ain't got to say a word.
Exactly.
But it's something about that look on that face, the behavior changes. She just couldn't help you. But she showed
like,
you love the best way she can.
Exactly. And I felt like it was almost like she did not want me to say it because she couldn't handle it. She didn't want to hear it. She just didn't want to hear it.
Okay, I just wanted to let the audience know that you're listening at Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and our special guest is Ms. Terry Lynn Sims, and this is a very good, important conversation. Well,
Go ahead, Terry, finish what you were saying.
If you wanted to ask a question or elaborate on something, please press 1, and I'll let you in. Go ahead, Ms. Sims. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, so what I was saying was I actually fractured when I got raped at 6 years old. And for people that don't know what that is, it's when I got raped, I went into the closet one night, and when a different person came out of that closet. When I came out of that closet, I had no recollection of what happened to me. I didn't remember the event at all until years later. But before the rape, I was really passive and really quiet. When I came out of that, I was angry. I fought every day. I was just out of control. And it was like it was a completely different person. The change was so different. And I didn't know until I was an adult that that's what that's called. And some people call it a split personality. Some people call it, you know, but when I went to school and got the therapeutic terms for it, I'm like, oh, my God. And I actually fractured 3 times in my lifetime, 3 different times due to trauma.
Yeah, because I got a master's in child and family services, and we talked about fractured. That's deep. And, that's really deep because that some people don't come back. So,
That's right.
So that's really
you
amazing.
See, that's what happened. That's what happened with a lot of veterans that have been to war. You know, they just don't come back. You know, they stay in that mode. That's why you find a lot, especially your combat veterans, and they just don't come back.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them
have
been there,
I was going to say, I have a younger sister who fractured, and she did not come back. And my sister has a genius IQ. She was like a child prodigy. She plays like 12 instruments, and she lives in a park. She actually lives in a park. Like, she has full-on, they say, a schizophrenia, but I know it's fractured. One of my mom's friends, when she was a little girl, came in the house and no one was there, shot her up with heroin and raped her, and she never recovered from that.
Wow, that is so
sad. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about the women. Let's talk about your ministry as far as the marriage, because I know that having these type of, going through these type of challenges as men and women, because it's not just women anymore, it's men and women. But let's talk about the women, you know, the women that you help through your ministry, through the marriage counseling and through the abuse. How do you get those women to really talk? Because I think that's the hardest part, is getting someone to acknowledge it, and then they got to accept it, and then they got to work through it. So how do you guys go about that? Let's talk about that a little bit.
The first thing we do is create a safe space. We create a safe place, a place where they feel safe enough to open up and let someone else into that space. And most people start feeling safe when they feel like the person they're talking to can identify with them. And so once I do that, I'm very open about my story and things that have happened to me and things that have transpired and how it's affected me. So usually when I tell my story and tell how it affected me as a mother, as a daughter, and as a wife, people start opening up because they're like, hey, I'm not the only one. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about because I've been there. I'm there right now. And so that's the first thing, creating a safe space, a non-judgment zone. No matter what your truth is, we're not going to judge you. We're going to walk with you through this. But anybody that has been abused and they're married, it affects your marriage. It definitely
does. It really does. And how do you work through that? Because, you know, like you said, there's triggers. So as soon as your husband, even if you got a boyfriend, as soon as your boyfriend did something or your husband, that trigger. Once that trigger's off, they go, well, you're crazy. What's wrong with you?
Exactly.
They don't realize that you have something inside that you're trying to hide and cover up. So how do you address those triggers?
The first thing I do is I try to let them know that, first of all, you have to realize that you do have triggers. You have to realize that, first of all, your mate is not your opponent. This is your partner. You're on the same team. And you should be able to tell your spouse anything. And I really try to get them to be transparent and open, because transparency is the key to this, being transparent and letting your spouse know exactly what's going on with you. Because a lot of my issues when I first got married was trying to maintain and control and hide all of my issues. That's what I spent the majority of my time doing, trying to hide all this stuff. And you cover up one spot, and it leaks out somewhere else. You cover up that spot, it leaks out someplace else. And so I had all these issues, and my husband was like, what is going on with you? Why are you so angry? I was so overprotective of my kids. It was just crazy. Like, they couldn't go outside. They've never spent the night at anybody's house. It was just so many, but it was over the top. It was more than just keeping my kids safe. I was so preoccupied with, oh, somebody's going to touch them. We can't let them do that. And my husband was like, where is this coming from? You do realize this is not normal. The teacher said something to my kids. I want to go beat up the teacher. Like, I just felt like I had to protect my kids because nobody protected me.
Yeah.
And that's what the root of it was. You were never protected, so now you're overkill with, you know, feeling like you need to protect them. And so many of our issues spill over to the kids.
It really does. You know what? And I have to admit that, because not that I was, it actually took place, but someone tried. And I noticed that even when my kids were growing up, they couldn't spend a night at nobody's house. I never let men in. Men didn't spend at my house. My rule was, this is where my kids live. If you want to spend the night, you need to spend at your own house. I never let anybody spend the night at my house, ever.
Right.
And my son, we don't date. And I used to have, like, some great boyfriends. I lost them all because they didn't understand. But but my whole goal was to protect my kids, you know.
Right.
And even though, like I said, it didn't actually happen, but the fact that someone tried it, I never trusted anybody ever again.
Right.
I start laughing, you know, and I apologize about that, because the way Ms. J said it, it was funny, you know. But
I was curious about that.
I can understand that. You know, I can definitely understand that. You know, it's just that I'm so glad that you guys done got out of that, you know, because I raised my son, you know, and I was very protective of him. You know, I used to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and go look for him, you know, if he wasn't in his room. And I would find him. I'd make him back home. And it's not the idea that I was trying to, you know, embarrass him, but I was protecting him from the streets because I know what war is, you know. And during that time, you understand, there was a lot of people packing guns and stuff. I know what a gun can do to you. You know, I was protecting him. And I understand it was different from what you're doing, but I understand exactly where you're coming from. And it's so
right.
The day is doing the same thing, protecting their children,
And what we need to understand is that a lot of times when you have been abused or you have seen it or been around it, what we do is we are overly controlling because the root of control is fear.
Yeah.
And we feel like we're protecting, but really it's control. And I was a person that I had to control my entire environment. If I couldn't control it, I didn't want anything to do with it. And it was that's just how it was. I was so controlling, and it was extreme. And anybody that came in my presence could realize, oh, my God, she's so controlling. But the root of that was fear. I was just afraid to relinquish that control. Because everybody that was supposed to protect me hurt me, so I'm gonna protect me. But when I was able to relinquish that control and give that to God, and trust in, you know, His covering and protection, it made it easy for me to start relinquishing some of that control. But yeah, control is something that a lot of people that have been abused, you're gonna deal with that. Either you're very, very passive or you're very controlling.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no balance either, because you're going to be aggressive one way or the other.
Exactly.
And you know what's so scary, though, is because I think a lot of people think, you know, when they think they're in control, but we're never, ever really in control because we can't control life.
That's right.
And so that's what makes
it
so frustrating when you're trying to be a controller, because you really can't control nothing but yourself.
Right.
And so
it gets
very frustrating, and it adds more agony to the whole problem. And that's such a great point. And I think that makes women, I hope that it helps women to think about, you know, even if they don't want to openly discuss what's going on, maybe just take a moment to look at themselves, you know, and tell the truth to themselves so they can start working through stuff. Because, you know, us women, we carry up, and I'm not judging men at all, but women carry a lot on their shoulders.
They do.
And we think we got to be the doctor, the mother, the preacher, the healer, the car backseat driver, the accountant, the school teacher. We do it all. For some reason, we take on that Superman, that Superwoman, behavior, and we got to learn to let some of that stuff go. You know,
we got to start learning how to talk lightly. Right. And one of the points that I did want to bring out is women who have been cheated on, but there is some PTSD that comes along with that. Why? They survived affairs, and there hasn't been a lot of help for that, the trauma that comes along with being betrayed by a spouse. And so what happens to those women, they also end up being overly controlling with their husbands. They don't want him to go anywhere. He can't talk to anybody. He has to look straight ahead when he's driving. He has to, you know, and you don't realize that that's unhealthy and it's not realistic. And you're setting yourself up for failure.
You're right.
So they need to be healed.
But I have to say this, is that goes both ways.
Because,
you know, like there's a lot of men that then had women that cheated on them. Okay? And so, you know, when they, you know, finally meet another woman, they can't, you know, really open up to her. They scared to open up to her. They scared to, you know, if she gone to the store, where you going? Oh, you took too long. Why you had to take that long? Where you been? You know, and all of that.
Right. Right.
And the reason for that is because it comes from his experience.
That's right.
You know, they lose trust. That's the same, you know, and the same thing with women's, you know, so that works both ways, you know.
I think it's more common now that men get cheated on because now women, the type of women have changed over the generations,
right.
You know.
And it's so easy to cheat now. With social media and all of that, it's so easy to do it now. You don't even have to work hard to do it. It's so easy.
Yeah,
somebody's always cheating on social media. Yeah, and it's really funny because they always get busted. So you know why they be on Facebook trying to do their thing.
It's so easy for somebody to be in your inbox or somebody to message you or somebody, and it just starts right there. And a lot of the affairs end up being emotional affairs first. Because it is social media, and you end up, you know, you're venting and sharing with this person, and you're getting a need met that only your spouse is supposed to meet. You're getting
that's
a need met outside of your marriage, and that's not okay.
No, it's not. But it's so true. And that's so funny because, I mean, it's not really funny, but, you know, so I'm a single woman, so I get a lot of crazy inboxes, right? And what's amazing to me is sometimes they just go on their page, you see them hugged up with their wife, and you're like, you really are disgusting. And I'm kind of rude, so I go back on them real hard. Because I think that if you're not happy, then be man enough or woman enough to leave the relationship. Do not drag somebody else into your stuff. I think that's a coward thing. You know, that's just my opinion. If you're unhappy and you're not willing to fix it, then you step out of it. But you do not have the right to drag somebody else into your stuff.
That's
you know, so I always come back hard, you know, when I get those kind of inboxes. And I'll be laughing, you know, I'll say, I'll inbox your wife or your chick. I don't care. Because you shouldn't have been inboxing me anyway.
Right.
You know, and so they're like, oh, you're crazy. I thought you was nice.
One of the main issues also that I recognize in the wives that I deal with, that they're very unhappy because they feel like it's their spouse's job to make them happy. And they don't understand that happiness is an inside job. Your happiness has to come from within. It is not solely another person's responsibility to make you happy. If you're unhappy, and that was my issue. I was just an unhappy person, and nothing he did was ever good enough. And I had a thing, and it was always, I'm unhappy. I'm not happy. I'm not happy. And I had to realize, well, that has something to do with him. You have to bring your happiness with you. You have to bring your happiness with you.
That is so true, and that's such a good point. Even for the men, if a man is unhappy, you can't fix him, sister. If a sister's unhappy, brother, you can't fix her. She has to they got to come to you already, you know, prepared to do that for themselves.
That's why it's important for us to be healed and whole when we get married.
That's right. We only have a minute and 50 seconds left on the show, so I'm going to ask Ms. J if she don't mind closing us out.
Absolutely. And, Terry, first of all, thank you for coming on, sis. I really appreciate it. Excuse me. And if you had one positive thing to say to the audience about healing, what would that be?
The one positive thing I would say is be instrumental in your own healing and refuse to be a victim. Just because you've been victimized does not mean you have to be a victim.
Absolutely. And John L. Brown?
Yes. First of all, I want to thank Ms. Terry Lynn Sims for coming on the show. And I would love for her to put that, which we were talking about, put that on a CD and just, you know, either give it away or put it up for sale, because what you're talking about is real, sister. I mean, you know, so, you know, just do that. And thank you so much for all the insight. And back to you, Ms. J.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming, and thank the audience for listening. We hope that we helped you with something. It helped you, you know, to see something within yourself. I will be posting Terry's information. She has a great book. I've got it. And I just think every woman and every man should read it. So I'll post that information. Again, thank everybody for joining us. Have a great evening and peace and blessings. Thank you, Ms. Terry. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Good night.